Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show,
a guy that we have not talked to, Bone, yet, but we're saving one of the best for last here, is Matt Manicharian. This is a guy who, I love his background. Scouting world, right? Scout for the Saints and for the Browns, but also somebody who combines kind of the analytic statistical analysis too of players. That's what they do at Sports Info Solutions. So he gives you the scouting mindset and the advanced stats mindset. And he is Matt Manicharian, Sports Info Solutions, and he joins us here on the Mac and Bone Show. Matt, what's going on, man? How you doing?
You know, I'm coming at you hot with some different statistics here. According to my calculations, the Three Stooges are definitely funny. Adam Sandler is hilarious. And Billy Joel, better than Bruce Springsteen.
Man!
QED. That's those are my conclusions.
He's got the takes, baby. You came in hot with those takes.
He listens better than I do on the show.
I respect those takes, man. I respect
that.
All right, so let's get into some of your draft
takes. As long as Billy Joel's televised concerts are not cut off by the network.
No, Piano Man's got air, man. It's got air. All right.
When James Dolan is involved, all bets are off.
Fair.
I wish he would have cut off some Knicks games back in the day.
All right, so we've been obsessing over wide receivers, and it does sound like the Panthers have some real interest in Xavier Leggett. Where do you think Leggett ultimately goes in this draft? Like, will he make it to the Panthers in the second round? And what's your evaluation of him? Like, is he worthy of using pick 33 on him? Is he that good, or are there others you like better?
So the way that we have the sort of wide receiver class stacked up, and I get why, you know, you're looking at weapons right now in terms of when you look at the Panthers roster. He's a guy along with a handful, like 5-8 other receivers that are kind of like not first round worthy, really. But when you get into that second day, these guys are all going to be coming off the board, and some of them will be coming off the board even earlier than that. So we have him as an ideal number 3 receiver, based on our grading system. And I think there are probably, there are probably like 10 guys that fit into that grade range here after kind of the top 4. I like him because he can basically be a sort of special weapon for you in the terms of the way that you use him, right? He can win at the catch point. He can run after the catch. He's not a guy that's going to necessarily be the best separator, but somebody that you kind of want to get the ball in his hands, let him use that wingspan, that 40-inch vertical, go up and get the ball. So I like him. I don't love him as like a true number 1 or number 2 type option, but he ranks out well across most of the statistics, and he can bring a certain piece to your offense, kind of like that true X receiver type skill set in certain ways.
If the choice at 33, and they're both there, is McConkey or Leggett, what should the Panthers do if those were the options that were in front of them?
So identical grade on our board. So, you know, you're picking between different flavors here. Do you like, you know, vanilla? Do you like strawberry? For me, I would probably rate McConkey a little bit. I would value him a little bit more. I think there's a little bit more versatility there, and that's where the separation comes, right? Somebody who can line up inside, somebody who can line up outside. And to me, guys that can separate, guys that have the route running ability that he has, that to me is a trait that I would value just a little bit more. But really, it definitely depends on what you're trying to do in your passing game and how you're trying to fit these guys in.
We're talking with Matt Manicharian, Sports Info Solutions, giving us his thoughts on the draft. So, of course, we're talking to him about wide receivers. We were talking to Joe Person, the Athletic Panthers beat writer, yesterday, and he seemed to indicate that maybe they're not as into McConkey as Leggett, but maybe there are also other receivers that he thinks they're into, guys like A.D. Mitchell and Troy Franklin, Texas and Oregon, respectively. What's your evaluation of those two guys, Mitchell and Franklin?
Those are probably the top two guys I would look at in terms of if you were thinking about it at this spot. I think, again, all these players, similar grade range, kind of the true number three, maybe not an ideal player to be a true, you know, number one or number two type starting receiver. They all have different things that they bring to the table. They all have different limitations. You know, Eddie Mitchell, you love some of the explosiveness that you see with him, but then there's some inconsistency there. One guy I would throw into this sort of range of players, I don't know if he's projected to go higher at this point or what, but Jalen Polk, the other Washington wide receiver, he's right there in this group of guys as far as I see them. And then one player who's fallen off because he's been he ran slow at the combine, Keon Coleman. I still have a lot of love for Keon Coleman in terms of his ability as a football player.
What do you think of Ricky Pearsall in this draft? What's your assessment and evaluation of him from Florida?
Here we go. Another guy who falls into that same sort of grade range in terms of what we're going here. So let me get something sort of like that I think is a little bit more important than looking at the individual players, the individual strengths and weaknesses. He's a good slot. I think he's like a true slot on the NFL level. I don't think you're going to want him lined up on the line of scrimmage. But what I think that is starting to become obvious, hopefully, from hearing me talk is once you get past these first three receivers and maybe four receivers, you get into a big glut where I don't think there's a whole lot that separates these guys from one another.
Yeah.
And this is something that we see every year. Receivers exist. You can find receivers. Maybe you can't find Jamar Chase every year. But once you get into that second tier, there are guys here. And then there are depth players, too, in this draft that it wouldn't surprise me if people drafted on the third day are also playing. So, listen, if there's one of these guys that you love, that you think changes your offense, and you see some differentiation there, go get him at the top of the second round. But I also do believe that if you can be patient in the third round, in the fourth round, there are going to be a couple of these guys that we might not have expected to be there still sitting there. Mm. And that's, as a drafter, you know, when you're looking at your horizontal board, not just looking at number one through number 300, but looking at it sideways across all the positions and being able to build your roster. To me, if you can be patient on the receiver front, I think that's probably a little bit better just because if you take an offensive lineman here, you take a defensive lineman here, then that's a player that you're not going to be able to find later in the draft. Mm. And that's not the same with receivers.
Yeah. Matt just realized just how obsessed we are with second round wide receivers here in Carolina. We want to help Bryce. We do. What do you think? You brought up offensive line. There's been some speculation here about, you know, would the Panthers, you know, they signed the two guards in free agency. Their clear plan is protect Bryce right up the gut. They got Austin Corbett, who they're moving to center, but he's had injuries and he's not a spring chicken. I think the feeling is, could they go get their center of the future? What do you think about guys like Powers Johnson and Frazier, that center group, and Barton, although I guess he might be gone? Like, which centers are available at 33, and do you like the value of them there?
If Jackson Powers Johnson is there at 33, I love that pick. This is, I think, a true plug-and-play, high-level starting center who has upside to be, you know, being a West Coaster. You're looking at him, reminds me of like an Alex Mack type upside. Yeah. When you talk about that. This could be your long-term answer at that position. So he's one that jumps out to me where if he's available at that spot, I would be very, very interested there. But Barton looks like he'll go a little bit higher probably. I think Barton's truly a guard prospect. You know, a lot of people see him as a sort of five-tool guy. But really, I think this is a power player. I think this is somebody that if you want to run duo and just push people around up the middle, you know, he's got some of that Robert Hunt in him.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the I don't think, the foot quickness. I think he's a little bit lumbering to ideally play either the tackle or the center position. I think he's truly a guard at the end of the day.
Matt, a texter wants to know about Chop Robinson and where he might fall and your assessment of Chop out of Penn State off the edge.
Yeah, so Chop's a funny guy. We've got a starting level grade on him, so certainly somebody that, if he's available in this range, would be worthy of consideration. To me, I didn't love him. You know, early in the process, a lot of people were grouping him in the same category as some of the, you know, the Turners and the Latus of the world. To me, I thought he was a tick behind there. I didn't love his film. I actually got into some arguments with some of our scouts internally about what he can do and how good he is. And it's funny enough, you know, as the season played out, statistically, he really started to pop. He has a high pressure rate above expectation, we call it, and he does a really good job there. the funny thing is, it seems like now there's a little bit less love for him at like a mid first round guy. Now he's looking more like a late first, early second guy. Maybe that's more people digging into the film and seeing a little bit of what I saw. But then at the same point, it's starting to get to the point where I think you really got to start thinking about him, because the top three edge rushers are going to be off the board at this point. And then I do think there is a drop off after there. And if I'm looking at the Panthers trying to build my roster, I'm really trying to build the defensive line first. And then I want to round out my weapon set at receiver, of course. But that's kind of the way that I'd be prioritizing the roster building. So he could be interesting there. I don't think he's a game-changing type player, but I do think that he's somebody who could be a good second rusher on a championship-contending team.
We're also intrigued by tight end. Once again, the theme is we want to help Bryce. All right, that is, we want to help him badly. But tight end feels like a position where, you know, you got Brock Bowers in his own stratosphere. And then after that, it seems like you could wait a while to take a tight end. Do you like anybody particularly? Like, if the Panthers were to get into the third round, even the fourth round tight end, we've heard some names that they've been interested in, but I want to see, like, do you have a particular favorite or two kind of that group?
Yeah, I mean, Jatavion Sanders, he'd be somebody that I'd be thinking about on day two for sure. I definitely agree there's a big drop-off when it comes from Brock Bowers to kind of like the second best player. But, you know, so I don't think he's going to like change your offense. But here you look at a guy that has really good hands. He can kind of attack the defense at all three levels, more of like an H-back type than a true Y tight end. But you can get him the ball in space. He can break tackles. You know, it's just going to be a little bit of a work in progress if you're going to ask him to line up in line. Number one, that's not going to be his calling card on the next level. But number two, you're going to want to see him get a little bit stronger in that regard. But if you want that move guy skill set, I think he's a really good player, brings the mismatch ability, and is a legit threat in the receiving game.
Yeah, he definitely is one that we've talked about. I know the Panthers have shown a little interest. He's an enticing, receiver at that tight end spot. All right, the man is, he's getting rave reviews on the text line. The text line usually doesn't like any of us. They usually don't like anybody.
Not us.
So Matt's done a hell of a job to win over the text line in this conversation. The man knows his stuff, former scout in the NFL, and he's now with Sports Info Solutions, the COO of Sports Info Solutions. He is at Matt Mano, M-A-N-O, on Twitter. He's Matt Manicharian. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate you.
I'll be Venmoing all those texters, as I promised. Thank you.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant Replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wes and Walker Show.
NFL draft almost here. We got you covered on Wes and Walker, Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. We had him on last year. He was so good. We wanted to bring him on again. You know the name. Tony Pauline joins us on the Bodyworks Plus guest hotline, consulting editor and NFL draft analyst. Tony, we appreciate you joining us, man. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely, Tony. We really appreciate the time. And look, the position that we've talked about by far, leaps and bounds more than any other position, has been the wide receiver spot. One, because it's a deep draft class, and two, because, well, the Panthers desperately need one. I'll ask you, Tony, is it near a guarantee that the Panthers are going to walk away with a receiver in the second round with two picks there in the top 40?
Well, if my information is correct, the answer is yes. And I was told yesterday they're looking at Xavier Leggett with one of those two picks as a receiver. There's going to be, as you said, it's a rich receiver draft. They're going to be able to come away with a real good receiver in the second round. I would be shocked with their need and with the strength of the position. in round two, really through the first 75 picks or so, that they don't come away with one.
Tony, we know it's smokescreen season with the NFL draft, but man, it feels like the secret is not kept well at all with their interest in Leggett. I mean, we just saw him do a podcast hit saying that the Panthers have met with him 4 or 5 times and they're promising him a spot at 33 as long as he gets to them at 33. Like, what are the chances that this is all the smokescreen and the Panthers wouldn't select Leggett if he was still available?
Usually a lot of promises are made to players that never come to fruition, but you have to look at the fact that, you know, I don't want to say it's a desperate need, but it's a severe need for the Panthers. They got to bring pass catchers in. They got to give Bryce Young better weapons, sort of a hometown guy, if you will. Great upside. I don't grade him in my top 45. I think there are better receivers than Xavier Leggett. But he's large. He's got terrific straight line speed. You know, he's not a bad route runner. He needs to improve. So, regardless of whether it's 33 or their second pick soon after in the second frame, I do think it's legit that they're going to take him because of need and because of the player.
Tony, based off of that comment that you just had, I was going to ask you, is Leggett the guy that they should take? And if not, who are your best receivers available in that pick range for the Panthers?
If I was selecting, I would take Ladd McConkey of Georgia. I know he's got some medical issues, and he's not as big as Leggett's, probably not as straight line fast, but he's a much better route runner. He's more reliable. He's much more polished. He's more NFL ready. He doesn't have the same upside as Xavier Leggett because of Leggett's size and speed, but I think there are going to be fewer bumps in the road with a guy like Ladd McConkey, who I had the Carolina Panthers taking literally in my last two mock drafts at the top of round two, until I got information yesterday from an insider that says they're going to take Xavier Leggett at the top of round two.
All right, so reports are starting to surface that the Panthers could potentially take a quarterback late in this draft. Would a quarterback prospect be good for Carolina to look at late in the draft, and is there a prospect that you feel could be dangerous for Bryce Young?
Not late in the draft, especially after all that draft capital they gave up to move to the top spot, you know, to take Bryce Young, regardless of whether that was a good move or not. You know, basically, you've got your top six players, and then it really, that's a position that it really drops off. If you're looking at a late round draft pick, you know, someone who you could develop into a real good player, I'd look towards Joe Milton of Tennessee. Hands down, he's got the strongest arm of any quarterback in this class. He's got an incredible physique. He's a classic pocket passer that's got excellent athleticism and movement skills. Problem is, he's only started 12 games dating back to his freshman year at Michigan. He's never shown any true consistent progress in his game. He can throw the ball 80 yards, but you don't know where it's going to land. He's got all the physical skills, but he's a real good coach from the ground up, and you could probably get at him in the 6th or 7th round, and he's your prototypical developmental quarterback.
Tony Pauline joining us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline, Wesson Walker, Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Tony, you've also written about what you've heard with the Panthers and their interest in Michigan cornerback Mike Sanrastil. Do you think that pairing ends up coming to fruition, and would you like the fit here in Carolina?
Well, I think what happens is Sanrastil could actually go as early as 37 to the Chargers, who have his former college coach there in Jim Harbaugh. Sanrastil has had just a tremendous preseason lead up to the draft, I should say. I shouldn't say preseason, lead up to the draft. As I wrote at SportsKita, people have said that he had probably the best pro day of any prospect in the draft, in this draft leading up to the draft. He's got great intelligence. He's incredibly athletic. Also has played some receiver in the past. He's a little bit shorter, so he's more of a nickelback. I think Carolina, with that second pick in the second round, could go Sanrastil. I think they could also go Junior Colson with their needed linebacker.
What about offensive line, Tony? We've talked a lot about that. We want to help Bryce Young as much as possible. Are you looking at a specific center or just overall offensive lineman there with the second round selection?
Yeah, most of the top centers are the two top centers. Graham Barton and Jackson Powers Johnson will be off the board by the time the second round comes around. If Jackson Powers Johnson happens to slip into the second round, as some people believe he will, maybe he's a consideration. Those two early picks, just a little too early for my taste for Zach Frazier, but you never know. There are some people who like Zach Frazier as an early second-round choice, so I think that would have to be a consideration.
Should the Carolina Panthers, as they continue to fill out this offense, look at a running back perhaps with their first few picks, and who do you like at that position?
I think the running backs won't start to come off the board until the late part of round two. I think it's more third round area. I think either of those two early picks in the second round are just a little too early for running backs, especially with the need at receiver, with some of the defensive needs. I mean, if you get into round three, you're looking at guys, Trey Benson of Florida State, I don't know that he'll be there, but he'd be good value. Blake Corum of Michigan, Ray Davis of Kentucky, Jalen Wright of Tennessee, Marshawn Lloyd of USC. Those are all third-round type running backs who are very good, but I just think early in round two is just too early for them.
How top-heavy is this pass rusher class, and who would be an ideal fit for Carolina to learn behind DJ Wonnum and J.D. Clowney if they decided to go in that range?
You've got four guys that are going to be selected early in throughout the first round. After that, there's kind of a drop off. Again, you know, Adisa Isaac of Penn State would be a terrific fit. He's more of a late second round choice. Braylon Trice of Washington, third rounder. Austin Booker of Kansas, third rounder. There's some mixed reviews on Chris Braswell. I have him as a early second round pick. Some people think that he could last into the third round. But all those guys would be good fits for the Panthers.
Talking NFL draft with Tony Pauline on the Bodyworks Plus guest hotline here on Wes and Walker. Tony, what do you think is going to be the biggest first-round surprise once it's all said and done?
I think Byron Murphy of Texas, the defensive tackle from Texas, could end up as a top-10 pick. You know, we had talked all along that people only expected one defensive player in the top-10. That would be Dallas Turner going to Atlanta. I think that we could have two after all is said and done, and Byron Murphy could end up as a top-10 selection.
Tony, we know this draft is all about the quarterbacks, but we would like to know, there's been a lot said about Drake May on each side of the spectrum. Where do you stand on Drake May as a prospect?
I like Drake May a lot. Coming into the season, I thought he was neck and neck with Caleb Williams as the top quarterback in this draft. There were some aspects of his game that I liked better than Caleb Williams, but the fact is this, he struggled last year, and he really struggled down the stretch. In my opinion, he looked like he was trying to put too much on his shoulders. He was getting the snot beat out of him, and he made a lot of bad throws. And the fact is, from my point of view, I like to get the quarterback that is basically coming off the best of the top end of his game, a guy like Jaden Daniels. Drake May hasn't done that. Drake May, in a lot of ways, went in reverse last year. I think he's going to be the third or fourth quarterback off the board. I think it's a sort of situation with Drake May. You better be patient with him. If you draft him early, which he's going to be selected early, you better be willing to sit him for, if not a full year, at least a half a season, work on his fundamentals, try and get him back to where he was in 2022, and then you could have a great quarterback. I mean, the last time we saw a quarterback come off a real bad season enter the draft was Sam Howell, if you remember. Sam Howell, after his sophomore season, looked like a top-10 pick. Following year, he was terrible. You know, ended up as, a fifth-round choice, and he's never really established himself. That is my concern to a lesser degree with Drake May if the team that drafts him tries to rush him onto the field.
Tony, last question for you from me. Top 100, they have like four top 100 picks, do the Carolina Panthers. Do you like the idea of them trading back with one of those second-round picks to try to have more bites at the apple?
It depends on who's staring them in the face. You know, trading back always sounds good because you get extra picks. I wouldn't trade back if you've got a real good prospect that's staring you in the face. And I'm only trading back if I'm getting good value in return. I'm not trading back for the sake of trading back. I'm trading back because you're getting good picks in return. You're getting a lot of picks. You're getting good value in return for the selection that you're trading away.
Always get great information from Tony Pauline, who joins us today on the Bodyworks Plus guest hotline. You can follow him on Twitter at Tony Pauline. You can also check him out as the consulting editor and NFL draft analyst for Sportskeeda. Tony, we appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for having me.
Earlier this week on the Wes and Walker Show.
Six on five with the empty net at the other end. Svechnikov, another block shot. Burns in the corner to Jarvis. One-timer score!
And, folks, you heard it right there. Raise up North Carolina. The Hurricanes came back last night and got a huge win, coming back from a 3-0 deficit to win 5-3 over the New York Islanders to take a 2-0 series lead, heading back to the Big Apple, or the Rotten Apple, whichever you prefer. I think if you're a Canes fan, you'll call it the Rotten Apple. But to join us to talk more about that, the lead writer for Canes.com, Walt Ruff, joins us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Walt, did you survive that game last night, or did they almost give you a heart attack?
Oh, my goodness, fellas. Well, it's great to talk to you again. Last night was a lot of fun at PNC Arena because the Canes trailed early, but it really never felt like they were out of it because they were dominating the game from start to finish. I will tell you, my ears are still ringing today, but I wouldn't have it any other way, that's for sure.
So the shot attempts in the final two periods were 82-11. The Canes just dominated those final two quarters. Did it feel like last night that the Canes, as to your point, what you just said, did they just flip the proverbial switch and just say enough is enough?
Well, it's hard to say that they flipped the switch because they really dominated the whole game. I think they just stuck with it. And it's really hard to say that when you're down 3-0, because when you're down 3-0, you look up, you see the scoreboard, and you see, okay, well, nothing's really going our way. Something's got to switch. Something's got to change, right? But credit to Rod Brind'Amour and his coaching staff. They didn't panic. They didn't make any major moves. They just stuck with what made them successful in the regular season and what made them successful in game one. And eventually the tide started to turn, and then they finally got those 3, 4, 5 goals and came away with a victory.
So Martinook, Staal, and Drury, these are three guys that they don't play that often, but Brind'Amour decided to go with those guys down the stretch. He said it was a pretty easy decision, to be quite honest. It talked about those guys were guys that he could trust to be in the bump-up shift. How clutch of a decision was that for Coach to do that?
It was huge because, to your point, those are guys that you don't have on the ice together very often, but when you're going for it and you're pushing to try and tie the game alone, that's when you have your best players on the ice, right? So the Canes had all their big dogs out there with 2 minutes to go in search of that equalizer. You've got to stay on the gas and avoid play going the other way even after you get that equalizer. So you go to your trusty veterans and Martinook and Staal, and all of a sudden, 9 seconds later, it's in the back of the net again. So I thought it was a great coaching decision. He trusted his leaders and obviously paid dividends.
Walt Ruff joining us here, part of Canes.com. He joins us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Walt, I just need to know, was this the wildest game you've ever covered? Like, there's plenty of stats to back it up. There is the comeback, of course. It felt like Patrick Waugh didn't know what to say. He's like, well, we lost one-on-one battles. That was the biggest difference. I don't even know how it happened. It felt like the wildest game. At least it could be up there for something that you would have covered in your career.
Yeah, that was pretty wild, guys. And it was pretty cool to be around the locker room post-game because, of course, being alongside some journalists who have been here for the entire 20, 25 years of Carolina Hurricanes hockey history, even they were saying it was up there with some of the most memorable playoff moments in the organization's history. I think, undoubtedly, in terms of the postseason, it was probably the craziest for my career. The other one that comes to mind during the regular season was on New Year's Day a couple years ago. The Canes trailed 4-0 in Columbus and came back to win 7-4. I don't know if I'll ever see 7 unanswered goals again in hockey, but as far as playoff hockey goes, I think last night is at the top of the list for me, for sure.
Well, we had Rod Brind'Amour on probably a couple weeks ago and asked him this question. I'll ask you the same thing. What do you think the biggest difference is between this Canes squad compared to some of the other playoff runs they've had in years past?
Well, knock on wood if you've got it near you. I think right now it's the ability to have everyone healthy. You look at the recent years under the Rod Brind'Amour era and some of the teams that they've had going in 2019 and 2020, it was a team still very much on the rise. They were just kind of happy to be in the playoffs. It was a huge step forward for the organization at that time. But you look at the last 3 years, a couple seasons ago, they lost Frederik Andersen, their star in net, late in the regular season. He wound up never playing in the postseason. Last year, Max Pacioretty was scheduled to be a big part of things. He obviously went down for the year in January, tearing his Achilles for the second time. And then last year, Andrei Svechnikov didn't play in the postseason either. So knock on wood, it's a relatively healthy group right now. And if they can stay that way, you've got to feel good about what they've got roster-wise.
Looking at this team, and Jake Guentzel, since he's come over, he's been tremendous for them. And then you've got Seth Jarvis and Sebastian Aho. I mean, who would you say is the most valuable player on this team in this moment? And is this the most potent that this team has been, in your opinion?
Well, it's certainly a great question, and it's hard to say somebody other than Sebastian Aho being that guiding force for the team right now, because he's the number one center. He plays alongside Jake Guentzel. I'm sure if you ask those two guys why they've had as much success as they've had since Jake Guentzel came over, they'd probably point right at each other. They've been a seamless fit since Guentzel came aboard, and that's not always the case when you make a trade at the deadline. Sometimes it takes guys a while to find their niche within the lineup, find their role, if you will. But since they've Guentzel came over, it looks like they've played together for years, and they've been the 1-2 punch for this team for about a month and a half now, which has been nice, because if you look at historically this team, it's been a rotating cast alongside Aho of guys like Karavine and Svechnikov, and you can kind of Seth Jarvis, throw him in there. There have been rotating pieces around them, but now it feels like they've got the constant staple up top, and it's really just a matter of who slots in beside them, because it's working out with anyone you go with in that role.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked, because Instant Replay continues next, only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
We have a man who sometimes I upset, though I never really try to. That's a lie. Sometimes I try to. Coach Matt Daugherty, back in studio, longtime Tar Heel, former head coach, national champ as a player, with us in studio each and every Wednesday. What's up, Coach? How are you?
Man, good to be here. Always good to be here.
Reggie Bush got his Heisman Trophy back earlier today. How about that?
I just have mixed emotions about that. Like, you know, they broke major rules back then. They paying the crap out of them, and, you know, it was against the rules back then. Now, maybe not so much. And so, I don't know, giving it back to them now, I don't know. Like you said off the air, the NCAA hasn't acknowledged it. The Heisman has, and, you know, much to do about nothing, really. I mean, really, like, you know, okay, well, that's all right, great. And, you know, we'll see him on some, you know, Nissan commercials, and those are awesome commercials, by the way. They'll probably have a lot of fun with it in the Nissan house.
Yeah, and as a speaker too, it's kind of like becoming a Hall of Famer, right? When you get the gold jacket in the NFL, your speaking fees go up, right?
Yeah.
You know, there are benefits to being acknowledged and recognized as a Hall of Famer, as a Heisman Trophy winner, right? So these are the benefits that he's been missing out on for the last 14 years, basically.
But I don't know. I mean, I would still introduce him. If I was introducing him at an event, Heisman Trophy winner.
Were they allowed to, though?
He won the award, right? Then they took it from him?
He basically agreed to forfeit the trophy in 2010, right?
So
for the last 14 years, I don't know if he's been – if they – like the network certainly, I don't think, have introduced him as Heisman Trophy winner Reggie Bush, even though we all talk about him like that.
Yeah, so, we got some other stuff to talk about.
We got some other stuff to talk about. All right, I know you're conflicted on this, and that's okay. Are you conflicted on J.J. Redick becoming the next head coach of the Hornets?
Yeah, you know, he's an easy guy not to like, especially if you, wore Carolina blue. But doing some research on my new friend ChatGPT, 4.0 version. I pay for it. Yes, I do. And I was always curious, like, okay, what players went from the court to no coaching experience to the lead seat on the bench, you know, not an assistant. Well, Steve Kerr, Doc Rivers, Mark Jackson, Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas, Derek Fisher, Vinny Del Negro, and Jason Kidd. And all those, you could make a case, had reasonable success. You know, maybe Derek Fisher didn't have great success. Isaiah, decent, you know, success. Mark Jackson, you know, high highs, then flamed out. But, you know, Steve Kerr obviously had talent. Now these guys had talent. Larry Bird had talent. I don't recall Vinny Del Negro's team. Jason Kidd had talent. And so, you know, you're only as good as your talent, right? You have to have talent. And, mm-hmm. and but I think, well, JJ, could he be a good head coach? I get a vibe that the players would respect him.
Yep.
And, you know, what he did as a player, he was an elite worker and grinder. And I think that, I think he's a good, will communicate. You know, can he connect emotionally with everybody on that roster? That's the, I think, the biggest challenge with a head coach now, because the players are making so much money that they can revolt on you in a second. I say why not?
I'm not opposed to it. I accept the arguments that, hey, he doesn't have coaching experience. He'll even tell you the only thing he's coached is his son's AAU team.
Yeah, but again, look at the names I just mentioned. You know, Steve Kerr, Doc Rivers, you know, Larry Bird, Jason Kidd, those are all high-level coaches. I asked Larry Bird when I was working for the Pacers. I mean, he was a coach of the year and had really good teams in Indiana. And I said, why'd you stop coaching? And Larry's a man of few words. He says, because I didn't like it. Said, okay, what do you think of practice? Okay, how about those Cubs?
To me, it's kind of like, you know, job requirements, you know, needing a college degree versus experience. It's a rough analogy. I know that. But it's like, you know, as someone with, you know, a college degree, I'd still take somebody with experience all day, every day over somebody who just has the piece of paper. And so, you know, JJ doesn't have the, you know, the years on the bench, but he does have 16 years of NBA experience as a player. Role players pretty much always make the best head coaches. It's not the stars typically.
No, star players are not great head coaches. Larry Bird was an exception. I think to me, they can't relate. The elite player cannot relate to the average NBA player, and they can get frustrated. To me, you know, Magic Johnson lasted like a week with the Lakers, right? And because it's just hard to communicate and connect when a player can't see the game like you saw it.
Right.
And the average player had to really figure some things out and do all the little things. I'm not saying that Magic or Bird didn't do those things, but I think the level of frustration is greater for a superstar in trying to get a team to do what you want them to do versus someone who had to grind. Look at the coaches now. I mean, I was thinking about this last night. Minnesota, you know, you look at Philadelphia. They have the kid at Oklahoma City. Like, these are no-name guys. These are guys that weren't great players, hardly ever played, didn't play Division I, and just grinded it out, were coaches. And, you know, Thibodeau, I mean, I don't know if he ever played basketball. Maybe he played in high school. But, you know, like the Van Gundy brothers, you know, they weren't great players. So a lot of these guys nowadays were not NBA players. They are just good teachers and communicators. And that's very important in today's NBA.
Yeah, I'm looking at, to your point, I look at a guy like Taylor Jenkins in Memphis. Right. I think he played high school basketball at a really good school in Dallas. That was it after that. And worked his way up through the coaching ranks. I'm not sure about Mark Degnault.
He was at Florida, I believe.
Was he?
I believe he was worked for Billy Donovan at Florida.
As a coach, right.
As a ops guy.
Yeah. I mean, some of these guys come up that way, and that's okay. But what you said about JJ, you know, I think he would command respect in a locker room in a way that a lot of guys couldn't, right? Yeah. And it's different, too, because he had to work his ass off to get there. JJ was not gifted athletically.
No.
I mean, Coach K famously talks about all the work that he put in before and after practice. I mean, that guy's conditioning was second to none because of how many screens he had to run through to get open, even at the college level and certainly going into the NBA. You know, I told you the story a couple of minutes ago. The best game that JJ Redick claims he ever played still to this day was a high school state championship game in 2002. He played for Cave Spring High School, same high school as Rondé and Tiki Barber. Mm-hmm. Former Wichita State head coach Greg Marshall also went there. But he played George Wythe at Liberty University. And I was in high school. I was a sophomore. And a buddy of mine called me out to go watch the game. He said, "You want to go with me and my dad?" And I said, "I got nothing to do." Hell yeah. So we drove an hour and a half to Liberty to go watch the state championship game. And JJ dropped 43 points in that state title game to win the state championship. And I bring that up because all anybody was talking about then, and I had seen it before, was that he was maniacal in the way that he worked and trained, how many shots he got off, even at a young age. That's the kind of thing I think he brings into a locker room and demands more from LaMelo, from Miles, from, you know, Brandon Miller.
That's right.
I think that's beneficial to them.
Listen, you have to develop your talent. Like, there's a few ways to acquire talent, I would say, when I was working for the Pacers. You draft it, you trade for it, you develop it. And so his work ethic, as you said, was legendary. And I think that's one of the reasons he said he got out of the NBA, because the investment he had to make, even on game day. And he makes an important point. I heard him on a recent podcast that I think it was after his freshman or sophomore year. They didn't win the national championship. And Coach K called him in, and JJ admits to, you know, partying a lot, you know, doing the fraternity thing, drinking a lot. And Coach K called him in and said, "You know what? You didn't deserve to win a national championship this year." And he said that really woke JJ said that really woke me up. And then Coach K met with him every Saturday at 8 o'clock in the morning in the office.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a commitment from a coach, right, to do that, and a commitment to a player. And it held JJ accountable, woke him up, made him uncomfortable, but that's where you grow. You grow at the end of your comfort zone.
All right, before I let you go, I know we're almost out of time. RJ Davis is reportedly going back to Chapel Hill. He's not made that official. I want to be clear about that. But Seth Trimble is official, and it sounds like Elliot Cadeau is going back as well. If Hubert gets his whole backcourt back next year, I mean, I don't know what you think about that. But
well,
man,
it's good. It's good. Obviously, it's great, I mean, for them. And RJ Davis, he is better off coming back. The word on the street is he was offered $1.5 million by another school. Okay, so let's say Carolina matched it, or, you know, let's say they offered $1 million. I don't know. He stays. He's not, and I love him as a college player, but he's not an NBA player. He's not making that money outside of North Carolina. And he's not going to make it in the NBA. He's probably a G League player. I've talked to NBA scouts. They think he's a G League player. Can he be Fred Van Fleet? That's what I asked myself. I don't think so. Okay? I don't think so. I didn't think Fred Van Fleet was going to be a very good NBA player. But my point is, for $1.5 million to get a graduate degree and play in Chapel Hill for another year, I think I could accept those terms.
I would. I mean, I don't know what draft grade he got back, but I think we all felt like his decision was contingent upon what the NBA was going to tell him. And this is the beauty of the new NIL era.
Yes.
I know it has people pulling their hair out.
Yes.
And a lot of folks are still complaining about it on the text line today. But this
they're complaining about it because they're not getting it.
Right, but this provides an opportunity to keep more. That's
listen,
one of the chief complaints
listen,
about
man.
College basketball for years is nobody goes back.
Nobody goes back, and the players deserve a piece. And I just think, man, imagine back in the day. Back in the day. white boy shooting baseline jumpers. Number 44. Be cashing in. What?
Do you hear what B-Wood told me?
What?
Haywood was on 2 weeks ago, and I said, "How much would you be worth?" And he said, "Oh, $500,000 easy." He said, "I'm protecting your paint. I'm rebounding." He said, "I'm probably not getting it for the offense," but he said, "I'm $500,000 easy."
Brennan was one of my favorite players to coach, and I shouldn't say favorites, but he was a smart player. And he would come to the sideline sometimes and say, "Coach, what about doing this?" Or, you know, Alvin Jones were playing in the ACC tournament, and we normally fronted the post, and it was hurting us. But Alvin couldn't score over Brendan. So he says, "Hey, Coach, let me play behind him." I said, "Okay." And he did, and he shut down Alvin. He was a smart player, and Brendan would be in today's game. He'd be making $1 million. Listen, the dude at Balo from a former Arizona coach. Balo wanted, his agent wanted $1.5 million or 1.2. Arizona offered him 800. The agent got him 1.2 at Indiana.
And he was gone.
He's gone, and he's not Brendan Haywood.
Right.
That dude, you know, doesn't block shots, doesn't have Brendan's lift. Brendan was a great shot blocker, could run the floor, and he became a really good passer with the Wizards when they were running the Princeton offense.
Well done, Coach. Good to see you, buddy. Yeah, we'll do it again next week.
All right. Thank you.
You tuned into Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.